Welcome to the Unblocking Crypto Podcast. This podcast is not financial advice. It's meant for entertainment purposes only. These are just the opinions of a couple of rambling wrecks.
Welcome back to episode number 131 of Unblocking Crypto. Hal, holy cow, crazy couple of days. Great to see you, though.
Yeah, good to see you. Seems like everybody survived the crash.
Yeah. If you haven't paid attention, Bitcoin has, crashed under 50K. I mean, I think it's dropped like 30% in the last week and dropped like 20% in about 24 hours. But it has thrown, and it's not just a Bitcoin thing, it's an entire market thing, right? So it has definitely thrown the world for a loop, and everybody is trying to scramble to figure out what's going on. And I mean, I think there's a lot of answers, right? I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on that you could blame it on. Will we actually know what it truly is? No, but we can guess.
Oh, yeah. Now, I was on Twitter on Sunday night, and I was like, oh, Japan's in the tank. Like, all right, so that's not good. And so I texted my buddy, Edward Jones guy. I was like, hey, tomorrow's going to be a crazy day. You know, bloodbath. What are y'all buying? And he had no idea what I was talking about. and it was funny, man, because I was focused on it. One, you know, Bitcoin crashed, so that hit my radar, and then everything else was going down. And I'm like, man, if this thing kind of rolls forward, the European markets are going to tell the tale. And then, well, South Korea first. South Korea, they canceled the ability for anybody to sell anything. And so I was like, okay, maybe we have something here. And so and the next day, he called me before the bell rang and was like, I talked to like 20 advisors today and nobody knows what's going on. Like, nobody even knew that something bad was coming. I'm like,
what?
Yeah, I'm telling you, it's just, they just don't care that much. I'm sure there's plenty of financial advisors that are plugged in like that, but nothing like what we do. It's so baffling that that's their full-time job and I'm plugged in more than they are.
You almost have to laugh because that's kind of sad. But yeah, I mean, you look at Japan and they haven't had a drop like that since like the late 80s, right?
Yeah, it took them 40 years to recover from it.
Yeah, I mean, it was like 12% in a day or something. It was just crazy. And they raised rates. So for the first time in a decade, right, they've been at pretty much 0% rates, and they raised it a quarter of a basis point, which they expected maybe a tenth of a basis point. So then all of a sudden the world goes crazy because there's like $4 trillion of people borrowing Japanese yen to go invest other places for free, and now they got to actually pay money on it. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, Japan definitely started the snowball effect for sure.
Yeah, but to be fair, the people with that basis trade against the yen are the people that started the problem. Japan should be able to raise their interest rate a quarter point without crashing the globe. Like, that was unexpected. I mean, this is why you have to just be in your positions in Bitcoin. It's because who freaking knows what's going to happen and when you're going to have a 30% drop or a 30% bump. You just kind of have to get into the boats that you want to be in. And then you got to ride this stuff. I don't know when this volatility in you know, all this global interconnectivity and things like that starts to unwind a little bit so that things are a little more stable. But I mean, we're like, one little thing goes wrong in Japan and the whole globe drops $2 trillion worth of value, or the US stock market drops $2 trillion in value in a day, like more than the whole Bitcoin market cap.
Well, I mean, I think there's some other things going on in the U.S. The unemployment came in way higher than expected. The jobs were way less than expected. The election is crazy with now that Harris is getting a lot more probability of winning. There's a lot of questions on will it be another 4 years of Bidenomics, right? And what's I know this kind of happened all at the same time, but right after all this happened, Biden's financial advisor or whatever, his economic advisor, stepped down, which was fantastic because that guy was an idiot. My worry is that he's going to help Kamala right now, though, which kind of has me scared. But yeah, it's crazy right now.
Yeah, what timing for that guy to step down on like the worst day since the COVID crash? I mean, yeah. But except for we don't have a global pandemic, we're not shutting the world down. Instead, Japan raised their rates by a quarter point. we got another, I mean, the unemployment reports have not been that great anyway, but the headlines haven't been too bad. But yeah, it's, and then you got the Middle East conflict, but there's been a concern of World War III now for 2 years. So, you know, to me, it's, who knows what really happened, but it seems like, so this is Tuesday morning, the next day, Japan's up 12%. Things are recovering quickly. So it was funny, man, that this is the first time that I've had one of these where I'm not like, oh man, I got to do stuff. I got to make some moves. I got to do this. I got to do that. And the only thing I'm looking at is like, all right, do I need to get out of some kind of crappy stuff and buy some more quality stuff on the equity side? And do I need to go through the couch cushions and try to find some loose change and buy more Bitcoin? Like, that's it. I was talking to my buddies about it, and they're like, what are you going to do? I was, are you going to ride this out? And I was like, ride or buy. That's my strategy. I've got a ride or buy strategy. I'm either riding this thing out or I'm buying more Bitcoin. And that's about it.
I feel like everybody I talked to is like, oh, should I buy the dip? And I was like, well, why would you not? I haven't stopped buying this entire time. Even my wife was like, I told her about it. She's like, oh, are we buying more?
Like, surprise. Well, I mean, if you haven't been convinced that they're going to do more QE and drop rates and print more money, it's like, these are the things like, oh man, we can't let this happen. We got an election coming up in a few months. Like, we need to add liquidity to the market and boost up this. Like, there's no way that the blue team is going to sit around and allow the economy to crash. Like, the economy is not great, but at least the asset values are high, right? Like, 80% of the population's struggling and watching their bills pile up, but at least equities are high and your 401k isn't getting crushed and your house is worth a lot on paper. And so, you know, there's kind of like this duality of the economy right now. And if you lose the asset values, now you got nothing. And so I don't think the crypts are going to stand for that.
Yeah. So you mentioned liquidity. That was the other thing that I was reading a little bit more about, was jump trading. And jump trading had a ton of liquidations, and everybody's kind of questioning whether they got margin called or if just some big person got burnt and needed some liquidity. And since crypto is open 24/7, 365, that was the only place to kind of go. But what was interesting, I read some more about it, that their buys were a lot higher than everything else. And a lot of it had to do with, I think, some stolen Ethereum was put through Tornado Cash and created a lot of buying and selling pressure. And I mean, just with being on a Sunday and it not being very liquid in general, it just, everything kind of crashed from a crypto perspective too, right?
So yeah, I mean, it's crazy what happens when you allow people to buy and sell. On Monday morning, when I tried to log into my Schwab account, I was locked out at 9:30, at 10:30, at 11, 11:30, and sometime afternoon I got on. I'm like, I don't even really want to do anything. You know, at that point, everything's down and there's nothing to do that you couldn't. So whether that was a, hey, you know what, we can't let these retail people crash the market worse, we need to block them out, or there's just a bandwidth problem and too many people are trying to log on at once, I don't know. But Robinhood, Vanguard, Schwab, and E-Trade, I know those were all down. So That's one of those things where, if, you know, on Sunday, when I was ahead of everybody, if I could trade equities, I would have been crushing it, where, you know, instead it's like I'm just watching Bitcoin go down and trying to figure out what I'm going to do to buy some more. But one thing I did see that I liked was, I was really focused on the in and outflows for the Bitcoin ETFs, because this is like the first day where they got roasted over a weekend. And then let's see what they do on the Monday, right? I mean, they were down 14% when the bell rang Monday morning. And they pretty much just didn't sell. I mean, combined ETF in aggregate sold 168 million, and 69 of that was from GBTC, which seems to sell most days anyway. So yeah, $100 million in a $15 billion AUM, a couple percent. Like, I'm not sweating that. They did $3 billion worth of volume, which is a big day. But I think it's a great sign that on a terrible day like that, that the Bitcoin ETFs weren't scrambling and selling. It looks like they either their 401k, it's a lot of 401k money that isn't being paid attention to, or it's quarterly rebalancing type of stuff and they're not watching it and they're not trying to make moves, which when, you know, you're talking about what you want Bitcoin to do, you eventually, you know, the volatility is going to kind of come down. I think we still have plenty based on this weekend, but I think it was a good thing that those guys didn't scramble, because then you're crashing things again. So I thought that was good.
Well, from a volatility perspective, the VIX, I think, hit 50. And the last two times that it did that was COVID and then the 08 financial meltdown before that, right? So, I mean, yes, there's a lot of volatility out there. But the other kind of silver lining behind all this was Morgan Stanley just came out and said they're going to allow their high value, high net worth clients buy Bitcoin ETFs. And right now it's only going to be the BlackRock and Fidelity. But that's huge. I mean, we talked about this back in February, that it's going to take 6 months before you see a lot of these investment banks. And I think Cathie Wood came on at that same time and said, we're seeing a lot of positive things going on, and they're number three or whatever it was in the Bitcoin ETFs. But she's like, our biggest customers are the Morgan Stanleys, the Bank of Americas, the Wells Fargos, and they have not turned on spot Bitcoin ETFs for their clients yet. So this is the first one. Granted, it's a small subset of their clientele, but that is, it's huge news, right? I mean, there's 15,000 advisors just at Morgan Stanley that can go out and sell this now.
Yeah, so I did read about that, and it looked like they were limited to $1.5 million in net worth as kind of their high value customers. So, you know, it's not like they said 5 million, you know, so if you talk about people that are older, 50 plus, that have been in investing, to me, you know, that's not crazy. And it's like everything in Bitcoin. That's step one, right? High value at Morgan Stanley. Okay, well, guess what? Now the high value customers at Wells Fargo, Bank of America, and everybody else is going to, they're going to be like, okay, why can't I get in? So the game theory starts to fall. And then you have people that have a net worth of $1 million and say, why can't I get in? Okay, so now they're going to all kind of creep that down. So this is just kind of the way it works. You want everything to happen. Well, in theory, you want everything to happen at once, but you actually don't. But no, you start combining that Morgan Stanley, 15,000 advisors. You know, there was a panel at the Bitcoin conference on the asymmetric opportunity of Bitcoin. It was like Scaramucci and Gary Cardone. And one of the things that I took away from that was, you know, Gary Cardone was like, Bitcoin's done a lot in the last 15 years, come a long way, $1.5 trillion market cap, and your marketing sucks, right? Like, you're trying to convince people of all this stuff, teach them all this money stuff, all, you know, like all this freedom stuff, all this, you know, like, you know, eat meat. I mean, all this Bitcoin stuff. It's like, well, your marketing sucks. Wait until Morgan Stanley puts their marketing team together and starts to put, you know, like, instead of the being super principled, it's more getting more people in the door. And yeah, in theory, I'm like, oh man, but the principles are good. But it's almost like Trojan horse style. Push them along on the greedy side. Hey, this is, you know, you're going to bolster your portfolio, you're going to make more money. And then maybe a percentage of those people starts to learn the principle side. And that's way better than nobody learning the principal side and everybody just being unaware of Bitcoin or thinking it's magic internet money that is speculative nonsense. So put it all together, man. It's tailwinds.
Yeah. I think it's one of those things that most people here in the US just care about themselves, right? Because they don't have, well, they live in a really great place compared to a lot of the rest of the world that has a ton of their freedoms taken away. So it's more important for them is just to increase their wealth at this point. But I think, like we've talked about in the past, that the ability of what Bitcoin and crypto gives you from a freedom perspective is amazing. And the more you understand that, the more you're going to be like, okay, yeah, I want to have some of this just in case.
Yeah. And there was another panel, not to go back to Bitcoin 2024, but it was about improving the user experience, and the River CEO, Alex Leishman, was on talking about that. And he said 30% of their customers, so this is like fairly early adopters on River, not on Coinbase and even Stripe. And 30% of their customers had withdrawn on chain, and only half of those had gone to self-custody. So I think the hardcore Bitcoiners need to start realizing that trusted third parties are going to be a part of Bitcoin, and to realize, okay, like, slowly let it go. But it's not that different then okay, I've got some cash in my safe, and I've got a credit card, and I've got a bank. You know, it's like, all right, I've got some Bitcoin in self custody. I've got some Bitcoin at a bank, effectively. And so, yeah, so I think that that part of it needs to start to get developed. And we talk about it almost not every week, but we seem to have weeks in a row where we talk about the user experience of transferring Bitcoin. You know, that's the piece that's kind of holding things back on the medium of exchange side. And honestly, man, the more people value it and put it in their portfolios, the closer we get to the medium exchange side. And we got some time to figure out how to get people's cell phones to talk easier and transfer Bitcoin from person to person or person to company.
Well, I think the more that markets in general shut down for extended periods of time, the more people are going to realize, okay, I want to have options to where I'm not tied to a certain company and saying I can only do things when they want me to do things, right? I mean, the DeFi space during all this flourished, right? Aave, they made like $6 million in a matter of a few hours on just helping all the DeFi protocols, right? I mean, just because those were up and going, everybody needed to exchange money. So it went really well for them. You can't really say that about Morgan Stanley and everybody else that was down for 4+ hours.
Yeah, I mean, it's even if Coinbase is down, you can still transact. I mean, you know, it's open source, right? So like I have a Schwab account. I have the equities that I hold in Schwab. I can't log into a Robinhood account and buy or sell those equities. You know, it isn't cross platform like that, where, you know, if I have Bitcoin in self-custody that I want to sell on a day and Coinbase is down, okay, fine, no problem. I'll transfer it to Strike, or I'll transfer it to River, or I'll transfer it to somewhere else. And that's not something you get with traditional finance, or if you do, it's super clumsy and you got to wait 2 days. I mean, like when this stuff was going down on Sunday, I'm like, oh man, I'm going to move a little money from like a high yield savings account, because in my head, all right, they're going to drop rates. So those high yield savings accounts are coming down. That 5% easy money I was getting with the dry powder is going to disappear. I'm like, okay, well, I need to start rotating out of that and start, you know, if I'm going to buy a Bitcoin when it drops to 50,000, that's a pretty good spot to buy it in. And so you know, I click submit, and it's like, well, 1 to 2 business days, your money will hit your checking account. I'm like, God, this sucks. You want to talk about Bitcoin being slow for 10 to 20 minutes? 1 to 2 days, man. Like, and forget it. If you submit it on a Friday, it's 3 to 4 days. So, yeah. So, you know, everybody likes to complain about how slow Bitcoin is, but man, it's nothing compared to transferring money from bank to bank.
Yeah, absolutely. You talk about rate cuts, and I think that's the big question now is what's going to happen, right? I mean, we just had, or the Fed just got together and said no rate cuts till September. There's one of the guys at Wharton Business School there is calling for an immediate 75 basis point rate cut, and then another 75 basis points in September too. So I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, I think the expectation for sure is rates are going to get cut. Are they going to have an emergency meeting or not? I have no idea, but the last time that rates were cut, Bitcoin went from about 8,000 to 64,000 in 12 months. So it definitely is a good thing for Bitcoin and risk assets when the rates do go down.
Yeah, it's kind of a mixed bag too, because like, one, if they have an emergency meeting and they cut 75 basis points, everybody freaks out, right? Everybody freaks out. I think that would, you want to talk about having a crash. Man, people would be running for the exits, like figure out where to hide until things settle down. So I think that guy's forgetting about how people respond. So I think playing it slow is probably a better move. And an emergency, you know, if they call an emergency meeting, they're not going to cut it a quarter point. So I think they have to watch and see what happens if this thing kind of bounces back and settles out a little bit with a, you know, we're kind of overdue for any sort of correction. So it's not that big of a deal to have that much of a correction in one day. Sucks, but we'll see. But for me, like, they work these rates back down and they start printing a little money when that liquidity comes. And then, oh, by the way, all the leverage longs got flushed out of Bitcoin in this drop.
Yeah.
So there's not a whole lot holding us back from going up from here. I you know me, man. It's really weird that I'm more bullish now than I was, you know, on Thursday of last week before all this crazy stuff went down, and I was super bullish then. So yeah, give me more time. You know, time is on Bitcoin's side. So you know, if things are good and everybody's got money and everybody's investing, great. If things start to get weird and crash, and I'm like, okay, well, they're going to cut rates, and they're going to print money, and they're going to wallpaper over this problem, and Bitcoin's going to be the recipient. This thing, a lot of people sold a lot of stuff. Now, when they go to remobilize that cash, are they going to remobilize some of it into Bitcoin where it wasn't before? I would think so, because now you got to consider it. It's an ETF, and we haven't had a crash like this in the equities market since the ETFs were available. So everything is good for Bitcoin. I really think that this sort of thing is a good thing for Bitcoin. I mean, the ETFs didn't sell off. That's a big sign. I think I'm right. I'm ready for it to happen. But, you know, we're still in, if you look at the market cycles and like the 4-year cyclical Bitcoin hyperbolic price escalations, we're right where we should be. It's like we dropped from 70,000 to 50,000, and it's like, yeah, we're about where we should be. Like that's, nobody else is doing that in any other investment anywhere else. That's like, oh yeah, we just crashed 40%, 35%, and no big deal.
Yeah, I think the expectation was we were going to be choppy until September, October timeframe anyways, right? If not even until after the election in November, right? So this is kind of more that sideways chop is to be expected. And shoot, it drops 20% and then goes up 10%.
If you look at the
24 hours.
You look at the monthly candles since like February, they're all kind of look about the same. I mean, it's not really going up, it's not really going down. And any given month, it ranges quite a bit. But between 50 and 70,000 is like the same band we've been in for a long time. And price stability wise, that's about as good as Bitcoin's been in its history. And especially if you consider how high we are above like the 200-week moving average, you know, we're well above that line. And stable. A lot of times you'll get that stability kind of closer to it. You know, in these crypto winters, nobody's talking about it. It's not really doing much. But we're not in that right now. You know, everybody's talking about us. Donald Trump spoke at the Bitcoin conference. I mean, it's definitely a bit of a different world right now.
Well, the other thing that I was looking at was the amount of Bitcoin that's actually available on exchanges is down to about 3 million, which is about 15% of the supply. And in the last 30 days, about 40,000 Bitcoin had left exchanges. Now, 34,000, I think, got sent by Mt. Gox. But then a few days later, it was kind of gone from the exchanges again, right? So it's one of those things where we're starting to see less and less Bitcoin. And then we talked a little bit about Cynthia Lummis and her Bitcoin Act, which is the boosting innovation, technology, and competitiveness through optimized investment nationwide. Their goal is to buy 1 million Bitcoin in the next 5 years, right? So before you only have 3 million left out there to buy, and they want to buy 1 million, and some other country comes in, like the amount of Bitcoin available is becoming less and less, especially, we just talked about it, the investment banks haven't even really turned on yet. Once they turn on, everybody's going to want some sort of allocation to it, right? It's wild.
It's definitely wild, and just talking about it, just throwing that bill out there and getting it in the news. Now the European countries have to consider it. The Asian countries have to consider it. Now it's going to take them a long time to consider things, because now the good thing is there's somebody that knows about Bitcoin in every organization at this point. You know, it's not like, hey, we got to go find somebody that's about Bitcoin. They're going to look at Jim in the corner and it's like, hey, man, you've been in Bitcoin for a few years. Like, you're the guy. You like start explaining stuff to us. Is this a good idea? So yeah, I think if you start putting everything together, you know, I was kind of thinking about this for November. You know, if the red team wins, I think it's clearly a good thing for Bitcoin and crypto in general, right? It seems to be open to innovation and jobs and beating other countries to the market and things like that. So, you know, that's like, you know, heads I win on that. On the flip side, if the blue team wins, well, then you're talking about regulatory moat around Bitcoin. And, you know, Bitcoin's already through, right? I think they're calling all these roundtables and trying to get Harris and the administration kind of up to speed on why this is good. And so I think that the big ones, Bitcoin and maybe even Ethereum, will if they crack down on regulations and stuff, I think those two already made it through the gates, and I think the gates closed behind them. So for guys like me, it's not so bad for Harris to win. And so that side of it, it's like, okay, we're through that gate. Other countries are considering it. All these investment banks are getting into it. And there's 3 million for sale on exchanges. And there's a lot that's not for sale at all, but whether it's lost and locked up, or whether it's got people that are just like, no, I'm until it reaches the market cap of gold, I'm not selling a sat, or, you know, forget the government, I'm not selling them at any price. It's going to, you know, price has to go up, right? If demand goes up and supply stays the same, then price has to go up, and they'll find it. But yeah, if to pass a bill that says we're going to buy 1 million of something that we have no idea how much it's going to cost, like, I don't know how that's going to work. Like, it would make sense if they said we're going to buy $4 billion worth of Bitcoin, then you can get whatever you get. But I don't know if you can say I'm going to buy 1 million Bitcoin.
Well, so I mean, the interesting piece is in that bill, it's written that they'll buy no more than 200,000 a year for 5 years, right? And then they'll hold on to it for like at least 20 years. And its only objective is to be used to pay off debt, right? So they think they can pay off half the debt. What's crazy is one of the ways they propose to buy it is to revalue the gold certificates that they already hold. So there's about $11 billion of gold that they hold at $42.22, and they want to send that in and get it revalued to the $2,400, which is like a 50x multiplier from where it is now. And that gives them almost over half a trillion dollars to go spend on Bitcoin that theoretically didn't exist before. It's in kind of printing money, right? But it's wild how they're doing this, where they're like, I don't know how they're just kind of printing this out of thin air or how that works. But
this is how stupid it is. There was some previous legislation where they bought gold, and they bought it, and it was valued at $42.02 is what the way it was written. And so the Bitcoin legislation that Lummis passed basically strikes that and says that market price or whatever. And so, yeah, basically they just, instead of having an ounce of gold at $42.22, that they have it at $2,300. That's so dumb, right? It was dumb then to say how much the gold's worth, and it's dumb now that they can just strike with a pen and create $500 billion.
But I mean, this is kind of what we had talked about in the past where, and I think it was Michael Saylor or somebody that brought it up, was like the first country to really go all in, and a big country because El Salvador is kind of doing it, but to just print their own money and buy Bitcoin with, is going to come out light years ahead. And I had anticipated Japan being one of the first ones to do that because they needed to, right? Now, if the U.S. is the first one to do this, why would everybody not follow suit?
Well, not only that, the United States has a huge advantage in that most other countries want U.S. dollars. So you could print U.S. dollars and you could export the inflation, at least mitigate the inflation by passing it around the entire world while you hoard Bitcoin that appreciates against the dollar and every other currency and all the goods and services. So yes, I think that in simple terms, he's right. You know, we print so many U.S. dollars, you know, half of the budget is just based on printed dollars. So why not throw in some Bitcoin into that and try to help yourself instead of just, you know, turning the money into garbage? I mean, it just disappears.
Yeah. So, I mean, yes, the crash is happening. It's not fun, but at the same time, there is so much cool stuff going on that from a long-term perspective, now is a great time to consider adding to your stash. And it's kind of like trying to catch a falling knife, but man, if you're buying at 60 and now it's in the 50s, what are you whining about?
No, I mean, I had a friend of mine and he asked me like, hey, you know, what are you doing? What would you do? And I said, look, because I knew what he wanted to say. And I was like, if I felt under allocated into Bitcoin, I would determine how many dollars I wanted to put into Bitcoin, and I would put half of it in today because it may keep going down, right? Or it may bounce back up. But go ahead and get half of it in and then allocate the rest over the course of the next several weeks, depending on how things go up or down. But I remember the COVID crash, and I had a Toyota Tacoma that I was selling, and I hadn't sold it yet, but I was like, all right, well, I'm going to go ahead and take the money from the sale of the Toyota Tacoma and buy Bitcoins with it. And then whenever I eventually sell the truck, I'm going to just pay myself back on that. And I told him, I said, like, that was the best buying opportunity that I had, because that was, you know, after the 2017 block size wars. I mean, you know, Bitcoin was in trouble, potentially in trouble. And, you know, there was a lot of risk there. Well, in 2020, that risk was gone. And so, I was basically getting Bitcoin at the same price, but I had less risk. Well, now you're getting Bitcoin at 10 times that price, but you have very little risk. I mean, energy FUD risk is almost gone, right? The banking, the government stopping at risk is gone. Like, to me, $50,000 is a great deal. Like, all you did was you didn't have to take on the risk of buying it at $5,000 to $10,000. So, you know, it is an opportunity. And like I said, man, the longs got flushed out. QE is closer than ever. Lower interest rates is closer than ever. The banks are coming in, so liquidity's coming, not just from printing money, but also liquidity's coming into. There's a funnel now that leads into Bitcoin through the ETFs, and adoption's greater, and people are talking about it, and it's super normalized, right? I mean, you hear about it from the normal people talking about Bitcoin often. I mean, like, if you, my Twitter feed these days is like links to CNBC and Fox Business and like things that are on television. Like, how much television do Bitcoiners consume? Not a lot. Right. So if they're on television, they're talking to people that are outside of, you know, people that got into Bitcoin in 2017. So that's money that's coming in. And so there's so many tailwinds that's impossible not to be bullish, which is hilarious because we just dropped like 35% in a weekend.
Well, I mean, to your point, I mean, BlackRock is involved now, and you could argue that BlackRock somewhat controls the government, right? So having them there, to me, almost no risk, right? BlackRock doesn't usually invest and want to get something wrong. So they're pretty much fully invested, and you still have an opportunity to get in for a lot of other people at this point if you go out around the Morgan Stanley's and Bank of America's and Wells Fargo's, right? Do it your own.
Yeah, you're still front running people that have $1.5 million in net worth. Yeah. With Morgan Stanley, well, you're front running all the Morgan Stanley or Wells Fargo advisors, the Bank of America advisors are front running all the governments. You're still way ahead of a lot of big money guys. And yeah, so are you going to see a 1,000x in a few years? Probably not. Are you going to see better returns than you can see anywhere else that you put your money? Almost definitely. Like, it's not rocket science anymore. You know, it's not, man, I got to figure all this stuff out and get into the details. Everybody else is figuring it out. Like Morgan Stanley, the BlackRock machine is figuring it out. All you need to know is like, hey, if this thing is just a store of value, okay, cool. I'll convert it into dollars and I'll buy stuff later. It'll help me with my retirement or my kids' college fund. If it becomes a medium exchange, great. Instead of selling it, I'll just trade it with people for goods and services. Who cares, right? So yeah, to me, people will start to, people understand it. Even people that haven't bought any Bitcoin are starting to understand it. And once it's super easy, or you can buy it, I mean, imagine logging into your Wells Fargo advisor's account to check your portfolio, you know, at the end of the year or the quarter, and you see something about Bitcoin. Like, you've been hearing about it for over a decade, and now you can just click on it and buy it. Or, you know what I'm saying? Like, how many people are just going to be like, yeah, I need to get some? It's going to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we talked about the U.S. having an act that they proposed. Bahamas has done an act here recently too, the DARE 2024 Act. I don't know if you've heard of this one, but DARE stands for Digital Assets and Registered Exchanges. their goal is to prevent an FTX from happening again. And what's crazy, it seems kind of dumb and simple, but pretty much the main piece of this is they want to keep customers' digital assets separate than the company's digital assets. So
that would have solved a lot of problems.
It sounds so simple, and I don't understand why that isn't happening with all the exchanges, right? But it kind of is what it is.
Hey, I mean, that's why, you know, if I'm a conspiracy theorist, why can't I log into my Schwab account to sell shares of stock? It's because they don't have it. That's, you know, that's the conspiracy theory reason why I couldn't sell my shares of Google, is because I just have a screenshot that says I have them, and they just, they have enough, right? They're fractional reserve equities. And so who knows, man? I mean, maybe they can do that and they can stop themselves from blowing up, but stuff like that makes me want to just trash all of that stuff and just throw it all into Bitcoin.
Well, I mean, you still got guys like Larry Fink saying RWAs are the future. So all of those shares at some point will be a tokenized asset that theoretically
I can actually hold.
Yeah, you can hold and it'll be tradable 24/7, right? Which would be amazing, I think, in my opinion.
Yeah, and you could verify it. I mean, it, like, instead of it being like you log in and you get your account on Coinbase, you could go to any web browser and type in your wallet address and verify that whatever the platform tells you you have in your wallet that is held by your custodian. I mean, it's not a terrible way to do it.
It seems like the simplest way. It would make things super easy to be able to track it all, but
yeah.
Oh, well, we talked about last week how El Salvador was proposing to close trades in Bitcoin. Well, Russia just legalized that. So they voted to officially legalize the use of crypto to settle international trade. It's going to theoretically take effect in September of this year, and probably they're saying is going to be used before the end of the year. So now part of this is Russia has been cut off from the Western worlds on their money situation anyways, right? So, but this is crazy because Russia is one of those countries that pretty much tried to ban crypto, right? So they have fought against it and fought back against mining, but it sounds like they're starting to rethink this, and I wouldn't be surprised if they take a more serious look at mining because I think that's one of the things that most countries in this world are going to realize, that mining can be beneficial from a country perspective too.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to happen. I mean, especially if we said it years ago when the U.S. cut Russia off of the SWIFT platform, like, well, guess what? They're not just going to give up and everybody's going to starve. They're going to figure it out, whether they trade in gold or local currencies or move to something new like Bitcoin or crypto. They're not just going to sit back and not sell natural gas to Europe. You know, yeah. it's going to happen. But what you did is you stopped them from ever buying U.S. treasuries.
We talked about RWAs a second ago, kind of some big news. The California DMV just put 42 million car titles on the Avalanche network. So now you can go transfer your car title to somebody else over a couple of minutes and not have to be somewhere in person versus what usually takes 2 weeks for you to go to a DMV. So that's huge. I think that would be really cool to see how this progresses, right? But that's a big deal to have a state put their car titles on a public blockchain.
If they can show a use case that makes a lot of sense and it is better than the existing situation and it's a disruptor for that, and it keeps people out of the DMV, I mean, just standing in line and doing all that crap, like it's almost like preventing me from having to go to a bank and send a wire and waste 2 hours of my life and then have to sit there and wait for the wire to clear. You know, yeah, I think if you do that, people might start to realize, okay, maybe there is some, you know, it's not just people talking about this stuff. I actually used it. I actually did a transaction and it worked and it was better than it used to be. Like, oh, maybe there's something to this. Maybe the tens of thousands of people working on this for the last 15 years are onto something.
The last two things that I had were related to the SEC. And the one thing that I did see, because I kind of questioned Trump's being able to fire Gary Gensler, and it doesn't sound like he can actually fire Gary Gensler, but he can demote him and put a new person in as a SEC chair. So that's one kind of interesting. The second thing that I saw that was intriguing from the SEC is you have a couple of NFT artists that are suing the SEC. So it's kind of the opposite, where usually SEC comes after somebody else first, but they are suing them. They're trying to get clarity on NFT art, because apparently the SEC has twice now gone after NFT projects and said that NFTs are securities. And so, like, one of them, Impact Theory, I think is the name of the project, the SEC made them pay $6 million and destroy all their art. And they're like, why is the SEC telling us that we have to destroy our art? This doesn't make sense. So they are suing them to kind of find out what the story is. And shoot, we talked about the whole Binance SEC thing, which didn't mention much here, but the SEC has taken off Solana, Cardano, Matic from the suit. And a lot of it is what everybody's saying is they don't want to make a call on whether or not those are securities or not. So they are removing them from what they're going after Binance for. So,
yeah, I don't know much about that NFT case, but if the law of averages holds, then the SEC is going to lose. Like, yeah, they haven't really won much in the last several years when it comes to crypto and Bitcoin. So, like, I would assume that they would lose.
Well, it's crazy. So the SEC decided to pull Cardano, Solana, and Matic off of that suit at 11:53 p.m. before the midnight deadline. And they're like, who from the SEC is up at 11:53 sending this in? Like, the SEC doesn't work like that. Nobody in the government works those kind of hours. So it was kind of crazy they did that. And, like, no one knew it was coming. It was just, like, out of the blue, 7 minutes before the deadline, they said, oh, we'll take this off now.
Sounds like a timed email situation to me. We're going to make it look like we were working after 5 o'clock today. We're going to set Outlook to send that email at 11:53.
Yeah. So, kind of crazy.
Yeah.
What else did I miss? Anything else crazy that I didn't
Nothing crazy, man. The only thing I left on my list is, you know, I went back. They're still putting Bitcoin 2024 panels and speeches on the Bitcoin Magazine YouTube channel. And so, like, the one I did listen to was on the Bitcoin ETF flows with Jan Van Eck. And it's a good listen. It's nothing heavy, but he said he's at 30% of his personal net worth is in Bitcoin, which is dramatic, right? Because people are trying to figure out if one is too little or five is too much. So now, I will say, he probably only put in one or two or five years ago, and now it's 30, and he hasn't sold and you know, recalibrated his portfolio. But, like, I think to me, 30%, if he's at 30%, I feel like it's cool if I buy more Bitcoin.
Yeah, I think I've seen little snippets of him on some of the news shows, and I don't think he's done buying.
No, I don't think so either.
His view is that this is the best asset for him to get involved in. And he said, it's not right for everybody, but for him, he looks at it long-term and nothing else compares.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's it for me.
Awesome. Well, this week should be interesting.
Yeah. Can't wait to see what once in a decade thing happens next week.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk again next week and see what the craziness is in the past 7 days from there.
Awesome. Sounds good.
See you.
Yeah.
If all of these crypto conversations leave you with more questions and you're looking for answers, I've created a product that dives into most of those answers, including why crypto, how to set up a cold wallet, and some of the more advanced strategies for dealing with crypto. Check the link in the notes below and hope to see you there.